Do not be afraid. Did you hear it in that gospel lesson? I could pretty easily forgive you for missing it, since there was some other stuff that may have been a little distracting from that part of the message. I mean, it's really something, that gospel lesson today. Today's gospel lesson continues directly from where we were last Sunday, and if you were here or if you recall that, Jesus was sending out his 12 disciples, sending out to do his work, sending out to continue his work. He gave them the power to cure the sick, to cast out demons, to proclaim the kingdom of God. And then Jesus started telling them how hard it was going to be to do those things. Today's lesson is just the next part of that speech that Jesus is giving his 12 disciples. It's sort of his first big sending out of people and saying, this is what it's going to be like. I think this speech continues or concludes with next week's gospel lesson, so maybe we'll hear more of it then. So what I want to do is just go through this gospel lesson piece by piece and go through the whole thing and kind of break it down to hopefully take the edge off a little bit. It starts off and says, the disciple is not above the teacher nor a slave above the master. It is enough for the disciple to be like the teacher and the slave like the master. If they have called the master of the house Beelzebul, how much more will they malign those of his household? So what he's saying is, Jesus' followers, when they go out, they're not above Jesus himself, and they're not different than Jesus himself. And in fact, they will be treated as Jesus has been treated. They'll be called names. They'll be shunned. The disciples hearing this in the time would not have known just how bad this is, in terms of, because they didn't know where Jesus was going. They didn't know what was going to happen to him. Even if he told them, you know, even when he told them he was going to die, they didn't believe him until it happened. So Jesus is first starting here with just trying to set their expectations. Hey, don't think it's going to be easier for you than it was for me.
Nope.
And Jesus continues, so have no fear of them, for nothing is covered up that will not be uncovered, and nothing secret that will not become known. What I say to you in the dark, tell in the light, and what you hear whispered, proclaim from the housetops. Now we're starting to get somewhere. Jesus says, have no fear of them. Don't be afraid, Jesus says, because I'm not afraid. Don't be afraid because the truth will come out. And whatever awful things they say about you and try to do to you will be exposed. Jesus says, have faith, keep the faith, persevere, trust in me. No matter what they do, they can't really stop you, so don't be afraid of them. Their words won't hurt you. Jesus goes on, do not fear those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul. Rather, fear him who can destroy both soul and body in hell. Are not two sparrows sold for a penny, yet not one of them will fall to the ground apart from your Father. And even the hairs of your head are all counted, so do not be afraid. You are of more value than many sparrows. I don't think being compared to a bunch of sparrows is really that comforting, honestly. I mean, just me personally. And there's a lot of sparrows around here, and it would take a lot of sparrows. Where I thought, oh yeah, that's a me worth of sparrows. But still, Jesus' message is important here. Do not fear those. Do not be afraid. He says, do not be afraid of those who can kill your body but can't kill your soul. And again, like, wait a minute, time out. Jesus, can we skip the killing the body part too? Is that, where are we at with that? Right? Like, yeah, this is where, like, you start to kind of look around and see, is everybody else hearing the same things I'm hearing in this gospel lesson? Is everybody hearing Jesus say this? Jesus says, look, ultimately, don't be afraid of them, of your persecutors, of those who would keep you from doing God's work. If you're going to be afraid of God, who is much more powerful than them, who is so much stronger than them. And the same God who knows you, who loves you, who created you, who knows every hair on your head, who values you more than all the sparrows in a pile that you can sell at the place. What are they even doing selling sparrows? Like, what are you going to do with them? I have no idea what the sparrow market was like in Jesus' day. At any rate, do not be afraid is the message he's trying to get across here. Everyone, therefore, who acknowledges me before others, I will also acknowledge before my Father in heaven. But whoever denies me before others, I also will deny before my Father in heaven. Okay, here's the part. When Jesus says that, that's when I start to panic a little bit. I've got to be honest. This is definitely the hardest part for me. This makes it sound like we can lose God's blessing, that we can lose the favor that God has granted us because of what we do or because of what we fail to do. Now, we don't believe that. Our faith says that God has sent Jesus to live and die and rise again for us, and that nothing that we do can separate us from the love of God in Jesus Christ, and nothing that happens to us can separate us from that love. This one little section here I do think is challenging. But remember, Jesus is saying this to his 12 disciples. He's saying this, whoever denies me, I will deny. But remember, Peter, who's one of the 12, denies Jesus 3 times and still is the rock on which the church is founded. I'm pretty sure that these words don't last forever, that Jesus overwrites these words with words of more grace later on. But yet again, it does show the seriousness with which Jesus takes this situation. If you want to follow me, Jesus says, if you want to do my work, this is how hard it's going to be. Then we get to most people's favorite section of this passage. Do not think that I have come to bring peace to the earth. I have not come to bring peace, but a sword. This scary line is actually probably the easiest for me to make sense of on a day like today. It's basically what I've been talking about in my recent sermons around here, just saying that true peace requires justice, and that trying to make peace in an unjust world will disrupt the calm status quo. That calm status quo that pretends to be peace. Yesterday, Stellan really wanted to watch Star Wars, and he had this Lego Star Wars-like spaceship, and it's from the movie Revenge of the Sith, which is the third of those sort of prequel Star Wars movies. Not the most popular Star Wars movie, but that's the one he wanted to watch because that's the one his Lego spaceship was from. So that's what we watched. And so I watched the part where Anakin Skywalker becomes Darth Vader, and then he goes and he kills all the Jedi, which is horrific, and then he goes and kills all the bad guys, the Trade Federation, whoever it is. And then at the end, I happened to notice yesterday as I'm chasing my kid around with the Star Wars movie on in the background that the newly coined Emperor Palpatine, when Darth Vader first tells him that he's completed his job and killed all the bad guys, the Emperor smiles and said, "You've brought peace to the galaxy." Because that's what Emperor Palpatine, the evil bad guy, thinks is peace, is killing all of his enemies so that he can rule over everyone. He says that's peace, but you know it's not peace. That's not peace, like under the thumb of a despot like that, is not peace at all. There's no justice in that peace. And that's the kind of so-called peace that Jesus is calling us to disrupt with this sword. Think of this sword as the sword of truth. If we can't tell the truth in our society, then our society is not truly peaceful. Think of the truth we've heard so much of in the last month here, that racism in our society is real and is deadly. That truth, and as we've heard it from so many in our society on the streets in recent weeks, that truth feels a whole lot more like a sword than it does like peace. And yet that sword is the truth, and we need to listen. We need to recognize that Jesus is calling us to reorder our society along the values that God would have us live, not the values that have built up over the years of humanity. Jesus continues, "For I have come to set a man against his father, and a daughter against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, and one's foes will be members of one's own household." Aw, happy Father's Day, everybody. You really like that part. I did hear some people complaining on the internet, like, "Oh, my Father's Day sermon is going to be wrecked because I have to do that." Now, come on. Not everybody likes Father's Day that much. I mean, it can be all these sort of family holidays. They can be complicated because some people have complicated relationships with their fathers or no relationship at all with their fathers. And that's okay, too. I mean, maybe there's a little grace in this word today for those of us who really feel ambivalent about Father's Day, who don't really understand how it works, who haven't had that positive relationship. At the very least, we can say that Father's Day, like so many other holidays and things, are not exactly one size fits all, and that our own experiences that inform those things can be valid and true. So truly, happy Father's Day to those of you who celebrate it. And for those of you who are not into it, I think that's okay too. Otherwise, in this lesson about, you know, your family members, your enemies, this is Jesus reminding the disciples again, this is how hard it can be to follow Jesus. Even your closest relationships can be threatened if you choose to follow Jesus and do his work, because the world is such a mess. There's so much work to be done. Our world and sometimes even our lives and our relationships can become or have become so disordered that telling the truth can hurt those relationships. I think of the example here of, let's say, a teenager who tells their parents that they're gay or transgender. Nowadays, many parents welcome that truth with love and acceptance, and I think that's wonderful. But even today, there's many parents who threaten or reject their children simply for telling this truth about themselves. This is one of those situations where the truth can feel like a sword. But the thing is, telling the truth is the only way to begin healing those relationships. I mean, if there's somebody that you have a relationship with and you can't tell them the truth, you can't be who you are around them, is that really a healthy relationship? Is that really good? Telling that truth can indeed feel like a sword. It can cut the relationship from where it was, but hopefully from there, a new relationship can be built. Just this week, I had to, a friend of mine has a child who is struggling with gender and sexuality things, and I was able to put that child in touch with a pastor who is gay, who has been through some of those things and who has a lot of experience, because the parent who is my friend is very supportive of this child, but the other parent who is estranged somewhat is not supportive at all. It was trying to make this kid conform into a gender and sexuality box that was not healthy and not safe. And so we had to do that. It's the truth can feel like a sword. But Jesus is asking us to tell the truth to one another. And tell the truth, hopefully in love, not meaning to destroy relationships, but if we can't tell the truth, then we can't follow Jesus authentically. Jesus concludes this speech for today, or the part of it that we hear today, with these words: whoever loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And whoever does not take up the cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Those who find their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake will find it. Ultimately, Jesus asks everything of us. Not because our salvation depends on it, not because our salvation depends on our worthiness. We may not be worthy of the love of God, but our worthiness has never determined what we received from God. Jesus is not saying do this or else. No, Jesus asks everything of us because of the need of the world, the need that is so great that it would take everything we have to create the world of love and trust that Jesus desires for us. If we choose to follow Jesus, if we choose to participate in his work, then it won't help for us to count the cost, because it's going to cost a lot. We don't have to follow Jesus. He already died and rose again for us. Our salvation is assured. Your salvation is assured. Your salvation does not depend on how you respond to the good news of God's love for you in Jesus Christ. But the lives and the health and the happiness of so many others in our families, in our communities, in our whole world may very well depend on how we respond to Jesus' mission. We can make a difference in the world if we dare to follow Jesus. It might cost us a lot. If we all stay home and keep what we have for ourselves, who will do Jesus' work in this disordered world? Who will love our neighbor if not us? Who will share the good news of what God has done for us? Who will care for those in need? And so Jesus asks us to go, to follow him, to do this work, to participate, to engage in this world, knowing full well what it could cost us, knowing full well that the truth can be a sword that separates us, even from those close to us. But healing the world, broken as it is not just a matter of saying everything's okay. Healing the world requires addressing the deep hurts, the deep injustices and inequities in our society and across societies. This is not an easy time to follow Jesus. It's not an easy time to be an American. It's not an easy time for just about anything except sitting on your couch. And even that might not feel right these days. But Jesus gives us an opportunity to engage, to participate, to be part of God's work in this world. So let's find a way to do it. Amen.